Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Hey, welcome everyone to the From the Shadows podcast. I'm your host, Shane Grove. Flying solo today, Jason, the super producer, is not available. So anybody who's only tuning in for the super producer, I'll just save your time right now. You can go ahead and go do some laundry or wash the dishes or something, mow the yard. So hopefully that's not everybody. Jeez. I just want to remind everybody, though, that if you do have a story or an event that you want to share with us, you can find us at From the Shadows Podcast on Facebook or find us at our discussion group, After the Shadows. You can find me at Shane Grove Author on Instagram or our From the Shadows Podcast Instagram page. You can send us messages there or just go to our website, fromtheshadowspodcast.com. Hit the contact button, send me an email, and it comes straight to me. I promise I'll get a hold of you. And I mean, that's how I'm talking to our guest today, because he sent me an email and I kept up my end of the bargain and I answered it and we got him on the show. So I'm pretty excited because we're getting into Halloween. Halloween's coming. And I think what we're going to talk about today is probably one of the great American ghost stories, for lack of a better term. So I want to welcome Josh Werner to the show. Josh, welcome.
Hi, how's it going? Thanks for having me here. I'm so excited to be here.
Hey, I'm almost ashamed that we didn't record our conversation ahead of time, because people might have been interested in that, but then
would have made a whole separate episode right there. Yeah.
So Josh, let's tell everybody why you're on the show. Just I won't even spoil it for anybody. I'll let you tell everybody.
Cool. So I'm the editor in chief of a publishing company. We do a lot of things. We do board games, we do all sorts of stuff, but primarily what we make is comic books, and most of them are in the horror genre. And we ended up teaming up with the Winchester Mystery House to do an official comic book series about the mansion and the haunting that kind of starts like from year one of the story of the construction and then moves forward throughout time. And in the end, the short version is I ended up writing it myself because I couldn't find anybody to hire that was as passionate about the subject as I was. I was just a huge fan of the lore surrounding this and a huge fan of Sarah Winchester herself. And I got along really well when we were kind of talking to the licensors and getting this all set up, and it's been awesome ever since.
So give a brief explanation about, for anybody who's not familiar, about the Winchester Mansion and what the lore is behind that.
So it is in San Jose, California. It's thought to be one of the most haunted mansions in the world. It was the inspiration for Stephen King's Rose Red, Shirley Jackson's Haunting of Hill House, Disney's Haunted Mansion. It's kind of the original American Gothic mansion story that sparked a whole subgenre of fiction inspired by it. It it was built by Sarah Winchester. She was the heiress to the Winchester repeating arms fortune. They made the famous Winchester rifles. And after losing her in-laws and her husband and her daughter all in a pretty short amount of time, she ended up alone and grieving and now owning half of this company and its massive fortune. And she decided to take that money and essentially dedicate the rest of her life to the dead and start building this gigantic, huge labyrinth of a house with hundreds of rooms that most of which have never been, you know, have never had human beings, living ones, living in them. It's thought that a lot of the spirits that she built them for still reside in those rooms to this day. And a lot of her her motivations and her story is all kind of part of this. She was a very, very interesting person. But yeah, primarily it was thought that she was cursed, that she had all this blood on her hands, and that she was a victim of, her family was a victim of a curse placed on her by the ghost of everyone who had ever been killed by a Winchester rifle. And for those who don't know, that rifle was it was a game changer. It was utilized, an early model of it was utilized really heavily in the Civil War, and it kind of turned the tides. And every soldier really wanted to get their hands on one because it meant they could stay alive longer. It was also used a lot in our westward expansion. So there were a lot of Native American tribes that were killed with this particular gun. And it's Sarah, she kind of swore off having anything to do with the rifles after losing her family. And she just kind of focused solely on this house, that and a lot of philanthropy for the rest of her life.
So what was there, a, other than losing her in-laws and her husband, was there any other genesis for her to believe that there was a curse place, or was it just, I mean, is there any, like, anything written or known at the, about a real life curse placed, or is it really just bad luck and she didn't
know that? It's really interesting because there's very few definitive documents that give us a lot of facts, but the stories that have been passed down, they've existed since before she died. They have roots in newspaper articles. So even during her lifetime, there's actually newspaper articles that released that say that she saw a spiritualist psychic who told her this was the case, and this is where she got her first instructions to head west and find a house to start building onto. And one of the first things that it's thought that they did with the house was build the seance room. And here she would go every single night to commune with the spirits to get instructions on what to do for the next day. So it was, there's a lot of stories passed down about how the construction crews were at times frustrated because they never got plans ahead of time. They never got floor plans or proper, you know, architectural drawings. They just got these little mini sets of instructions on what to do one day at a time. And those days just never ended. They were just round the clock every day of the week for years, for decades. And then sometimes if anything was slightly off, she would tear a whole wing down and redo it. Sometimes it didn't make sense, you know, as to why. And it was thought that because the spirits were guiding her to, that she had to kind of appease them. And so the stories of the seance room really kind of led to that as far as evidence goes. And then this story of this psychic. And at the time, spiritualism was huge. It was super popular. So a lot of people were trying to commune with their loved ones that they had lost, especially after the Civil War. It became a really big thing. Everyone had, you know, lost a family member, you know, of some way, shape, or form. There was just connections to death, no matter who you spoke to. So a lot of grieving happening simultaneously across the country. And because of that, a whole new wave of interest in spirits and contacting them. And this kind of all happened right at the height of that. So it's hard to say what's fact and what's rumor. All kind of stuff.
Well, I, you know, we know from that time period, you know, like Houdini made it his mission to debunk all those spiritualists and stuff. So you wonder if somebody just pulling a fast one on her got her to spend all this fortune, and all this time building this huge mansion.
There was a really, there's a really famous story about Houdini visiting the house and being unable to disprove the haunting.
Really? Okay.
So talk about it happening in the house, even, you know, while she was still alive. There were so many people talking about it being haunted. So yeah, there's a really cool story about Houdini actually going there himself and, you know, with the intent to debunk the haunting and not being successful and having to throw his hands in the air and come out saying, I don't know what's going on with this house. It's pretty cool.
Which is, now what's super, super kind of interesting is that, so it's not like it was an existing house that was haunted. It was a brand new house that she started building that then became haunted. Now, did somebody die while building the house that may have led to the haunting, or is this just totally to be believed that all the spirits from people that got murdered by a Winchester rifle decided, well, this is where we're going to hang out for eternity?
That's the thought. She bought this, there was a little existing house she bought. It was an 8-bedroom farmhouse.
Now, wait a second. You say little 8-bedroom farmhouse.
For the time, I suppose. Yeah. Like, you know, those farmhouses were huge, but it's little compared to what she added on to now. But yeah, pretty sizable house to start with, just like at a running start. So she bought that and then immediately just started building onto that in 1886. And it was thought that it was said that there was something special about it, that that she traveled west all the way. She lived on the East Coast, traveled all the way, you know, west and picked this particular place. And no one truly knows why. There's all sorts of stories, like, oh, the ghost told her to pick this one. Some say that, like, she heard the voice of her dead husband telling her it was this house. No one knows for sure, except everyone is very confident that she had a reason. This is the house that had to be. It had to be at this location. It had to be on these grounds. All that kind of comes into play in the comic book series at certain points, that she had a reason for everything she did. And we may not know exactly what those reasons were. And, you know, we've had no choice but to be subject to all the speculation from her workers or very, very limited number of friends and family. And then mostly the surrounding community. That's kind of like became this gossip hub. But yeah, so she added on to that and just kept building and building. It's thought that she brought all the ghosts with her and just filled the place up as she built it. And,
wow.
There's endless stories, you know, to date of how haunted this building is. So it's kind of, it's hard to know, to imagine why. Now there's, other than the stories, it's like, well, there's no tragedies that befell within this particular mansion. Like why is it so haunted? That being said, there is a particular worker, who's been identified, so there was numerous people, you know, the house has been open to the public for 99 years. That's a long time.
Did it become open when she died?
Yeah. So shortly after she died. So she died 100 years ago as of September 5th. And then they opened it because everyone was such a famous house and no one had ever seen inside of it. Mm-hmm. Everyone had been wanting to get in there since day one. And they've been, you know, behind a wall, like trying to figure out what's going on in this property. And it was just so enticing. Everybody wanted to get inside there. It was March of the following year that the first time they opened it up as an attraction. And since then, so that's just, I mean, that's almost, it's gotta be a record breaker in itself as far as like a house goes for, you know, as being in
it. It almost sounds like the plot for Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. Like everybody's like, what? Did construction stop on the house when she died? Were there instructions? There weren't instructions to keep going or anything? Or?
Nope. That's when all the crews laid their hammers down. There's still unfinished parts of the house to this day that they've left that way that have been unfinished for 100 years. It's where they cut it off. And there's a lot of just, you know, strange discombobulation throughout the architecture. Some of it can be explained by them just stopping and other ones can't. They're just like weird, you know, eccentricities of the house. But throughout the past 99 years, a lot of people have described a particular ghost in the basement. And many of them have also seen, described him as pushing something, usually like a wheelbarrow. And now he's identified as a worker that worked on the grounds named Clyde. And there's a picture hanging of the construction crew, of part of the construction crew, in the mansion. And people have come up and said, that's the person I saw in the basement right there. And which is pretty cool. No one knows how Clyde died. There's no records of this. But he's been haunting the place, so it's very interesting. So he got written into the comic as well. You get to see him when he was alive, and that's pretty cool. You also get to see him unalive later, which is pretty cool too. But
did you not to be a spoiler? Did you use your artistic license to create an event that caused his demise?
I sure did. And
all right.
I'll be honest, I am amazed that the house is letting me do stuff like that. It was such an honor because, I mean, obviously there's a lot of history here, but it's easy to take all of the lore and all of the ghost stories and put twists on it that doesn't respect the history, right? So because of that, they're the kind of the keepers of the story, and they want to portray a certain, you know, narrative for the lore that fits right with the characterization of Sarah and the house and the history that they, you know and love. And essentially they're protecting the story from, you know, being bastardized. And so I'm always super honored that I'm, you know, getting to write it at all. But when I approach them with a totally fictitious plot element that I want to insert, and it, as long as I can defend it, I feel really strongly about it for a reason. They're wonderful. They love it. And so, yeah, I've gotten to take some pretty big liberties. So Clyde's death was one of them that I'm really proud of. And then another one is the staircase to nowhere. So that's a really famous staircase in the house. It kind of just runs right into a ceiling. Yeah, the idea being that if you're a human being, you're just going to bonk your head. But if you're a ghost, you can continue up those stairs, and who knows where you'll end up. And while there's tons of speculation and has been for, you know, a century, no one actually knows why that staircase is like that. There's a lot of thoughts. You know, there's just as many people who are coming up with reasons why it's not a supernatural thing as there is, you know, the opposite. And even those people have to take a stretch. They're taking wild guesses like, oh, well, after the 1906 earthquake did all the damage to the house, they probably just sealed that off. You know, that's kind of the excuse that's thrown out there. But there's no evidence of that any more so than there is of, you know, a different reason. But I got to write in the origin story for that staircase into the comic series, and I'm.
Does it have anything to do with Led Zeppelin?
I should have.
When you start up the stairs, does the guitar riff stuff for Stairway to Heaven?
That would have. I would have snuck some little lake lyrics in there, something, the dialogue.
That would have been fantastic to take a couple of the lyrics and put them in the comic without anybody, see if anybody caught that. So I remember when I first heard about the Winchester Mansion, I mean, I was like 9, 10, 11 years old, and it was featured on, I don't know if you remember the show, That's Incredible.
Yes. Yeah.
I remember seeing it on there, and just, you know, it was probably a 7-8 minute segment. It just amazed at, like, what the heck is this? And what is the real story behind that? And, you know, at that time, you know, you can't go Google it up, you know, and if your library at the school didn't have a book on it, or if the library in town didn't have a book on it, you just had no idea. So I had no idea what this was. And there was never really any book that I ever could find as a kid that explained it. Just maybe a passing story about this haunted Winchester. So when did it become known to you? And then why did it become such a passion of yours to that you decided that you had to do this?
So I've always really been into the paranormal. And I want to say I probably learned about and heard some version of the Winchester Mystery House's story in maybe around 2000. And so I would have been a teenager. And
that's only 30 years after I did, but that's okay.
I was just utterly fascinated. And then, you know, next thing you know, going down rabbit holes, and it's always in those kind of like top 10 most haunted places magazines. And I would grab up every magazine that had even a mention of it or any article, if it was big or small. And I would read them all to death, and they would always kind of give me the same bite-sized version. And I'm like, there's so much more of this story, you know. And luckily the internet came along and helped out quite a bit as far as, like, you know, being able to continue that rabbit hole and keep researching. And so by the time they made the movie, Winchester, starring Helen Mirren, I was first in line to see it. You know, I was just thrilled. I was like, oh, this is so overdue. And then my love and excitement for this, you know, has just been a thing. And it's been on a bucket list, you know, of mine to go visit the house, and I still hadn't been. And I was talking to, because we have a board game division, I was talking to one of our game designers who actually lives in California. He lives pretty close to the house. And somehow it came up, and where I was like, man, I would love to do something, anything that relates to that house and that story. And at the time, we had put out a game, a board game called Floor Plan, and it was a house designing game. It was all about trying to please clients who have different, you know, needs, and you're competing with these other, like, construction crews, essentially, to design their, like, you know, dream home. And he said, wouldn't it be cool if we did a new version of the game that's entirely specifically for the Winchester Mystery House? And I was like, man, that would be so cool. You know, Sarah would be your client, and these bizarre, you know, like things that she needs that are not like normal house stuff. And he's like, yeah, and we could really focus on like certain rooms, like, oh, you got to do this, you know, famous room from the house, or you got to build this room. And so we were like, you know what, let's pitch this. Let's put together a pitch package, and we're gonna contact them. So hit them up, and they were very kind and, you know, listened. And I'm sure they get pitched for wild ideas all the time. But right away they were like, wow, you know a lot about the house and a lot about Sarah. And, you know, we're really impressed with that. I'm like, oh, thanks. And they said, you know, can we ask your opinion on some things? I was like, yeah, sure. And what did you think of the movie? And I was like, oh, you know, I thought the movie was great, but honestly, I thought it just kind of scratched the surface as far as the story goes. I'm like, it happens when most of the house is already done being built, all the famous rooms are already there. It's very late in her life. I'm like, I felt like you missed about 30 years of cool, crazy things that happened along the way. I said, I think her story is best told episodically, you know, throughout time. And they said, well, you do have a comic book publishing company, right? It's like, yeah. They're like, well, maybe that would be a best way to tell her story episodically. I was like, well, I agree. Yeah, comic book series would be awesome. And so we ended up doing both. We made the game and the comic book series. And we didn't actually go there with the intention necessarily of even doing a comic, but we walked out of it with it. And I ended up writing it myself. And then since then, I've, you know, been to the house a couple times. It's just magnificent. You know, I absolutely love it. And I, of course, I've been very lucky with that. You know, the comic was hugely successful right out the gate, and Hot Topic started carrying t-shirts with all the comic covers on them. So that was really cool. And I got to do a few really neat things, you know, with the house and kind of partnership with them. And I'm just so lucky. But I'll be honest, I'm supposed to be writing volume 2 right now. And I am. I know there's a lot of readers hitting me up regularly, like, where's the rest of the story? Because, you know, we're doing like 3 chunks. We're doing a mini series that covers the first 10 years, and then taking a break, and then we come back and we do a story all about the big earthquake, and then we come back and we finish up like the rest of her life, essentially, in 3 volumes. So volume 2, I've been really stuck on. I've been really in my head about it. There's tons to write about. I have no, you know, it's not a lack of inspiration or history or anything. It's just because volume one did so well. It's the probably the thing I'm about on now. And it's just set a weird precedent in
You're feeling the pressure.
Yeah, exactly. It's freaking me out a little bit, but I know I'm like, oh, what if it doesn't do as well? You know, is it supposed to do better? Or you know, like, is it okay if it doesn't do as well? It's just terrible. But you know, it's funny. The only other time that the Winchester Mystery House has officially been in comics was Dennis the Menace, number 148, I think, and it was in 1975. There, Dennis the Menace goes to the Winchester Mystery House. It was a comic. And you know, of course, I had to buy that thing off eBay the second I found that out, and you know, just be like, oh, cool, here's like the first comic, you know, official comic, and then right after. There are other comics though out there, like Swamp Thing actually did an unofficial take. They changed all the names of and everything, but it's very clearly the Winchester Mystery House. They did a whole story arc about it. Weirdly, it's a weird character to do that story, but I own all those too, and then. There's a couple other random comics that came out that were unofficial kind of thing. But yeah, mine's all legit. I get to work with their historian if I need to, too. I can contact them at any time. And that's really fun because we'll often butt heads over stupid little things. And I'll be like, listen, I'm pretty sure you guys have this date wrong. I don't think that's when that happened. And of course, this has been like, they've been doing this for 100 years. How dare you, sir? You know, and I'm like, I know. But listen, like, I found this letter that her sister wrote and blah, blah, you know, come up with all this crazy research that I did. And I was like, and I'm pretty sure you got this date wrong. And, you know, it's cool. I love those debates. They're my favorite because no matter what, somebody comes out of them having learned something, you know, new. And so I never mind being like, you know, corrected or anything because it just means I get to learn what really happened. It's pretty cool.
I was going to say, was a historian a woman?
In this situation, yes. In this case,
so yeah. Then you're wrong every time. So you've learned it. You've learned it. Something you take back for the rest of, your life. And I keep thinking about this Dennis the Menace. What was that pitch? Like, Dennis the Menace goes to the Winchester Mansion and knocks down the never-ending staircase or something like that. I mean, how does that, I mean, wow, that's kind of to even marry those two together is kind of crazy.
It's bizarre, right? Like what an odd comic, you know, for it to be, to show up in. But yeah, it's, you know, it's him kind of like leaving the tour and checking out stuff in different rooms and stuff.
So when did stuff start happening at the mansion? Like so I'm assuming, so did Sarah Winchester talk about to other people having experiences herself, like in letters or something? Is that documented? Do you know when like stuff started happening?
She was so intensely private, that she never took interviews. She never allowed people to, she was barely allowed to be seen. It was really difficult to even, there's only two photos that exist of her in history and one of them was snuck. It was stolen photo of her because she was so against getting her picture taken, that a lot of the information that we know, it comes from, she ran a pretty tight-lipped crew. So a lot of the workers that, you know, worked for her were kind of sworn to secrecy on a lot of things they were working on and a lot of the projects. And I'll give a great example of that here in a little bit, actually. But so a lot of the information we get is kind of secondhand. Friends of workers who worked there, neighbors, people who, you know, lived within a mile of her estate, Lenata Villa, and they would tell, you know, stories of like, oh, I ran into so-and-so on his way to work this morning kind of thing, walking in, and I was able to get this piece of information out of him. And they would run with that to the press. I mean, she was such a subject of gossip so a lot of what we know or think we know about the house and the haunting comes secondhand from like people who worked on for her on the estate. And even then, like it's thought that she destroyed almost all of her paperwork that she burned all of her letters, because when she died, there was almost nothing. They found, I want to say about 10 years ago, they found a letter that had slipped between floorboards. And that was ended up just being, I think, like a, it was like a an invoice from one of the construction crews. And they learned so much from that one single piece of paper. It, like, tons of theories and stuff, like, stuff were gone. And, like, it was so much information gleaned from that, because they're that desperate for any sort of concrete info. She was just super mysterious in that way.
And it was just an invoice?
Yeah, but they're like, this tells us so much about who actually worked on something, because there's all this amazing, beautiful, you know, stuff in the house, and a lot of it they don't really know.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today we discuss technical diagramming with systems architect Maya. Let's go. First question. You've spent 10 hours slogging over a sequence diagram that should have taken 5. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board. And if I'm being honest, Miro would probably cut that time down by half. You know, with its AI tools and ready-to-go templates.
Next, your diagrams become so bulky, it's more complex than the solar system. But all it takes is a few clicks and...
It's Miro. I've used those technical shape packs way too many times, and stuff is just digestible on its infinite online canvas.
Now, the final question. Everyone's brought in, but you have to make all these tasks all the way over in Jira. But wait, it's done. Is it...
Miro, easy with its two-way Jira sync. Easy to plot dependencies. Everyone always knows what's up.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people creating technical diagrams without workflow glitches. Get your first 3 boards for free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.
Who made it? But over time, they've been able to piece together a pretty good, solid, like, cast of characters, I like to call them, since that's what I use them as. But, you know, so they know the identity of a lot of the people who worked on the estate for, you know, decades, who ended up kind of living on the grounds. But for the most part, though, it's very, very little is known about all of it. But the haunting is said to have started while she was still alive in the house, while they were still working on it. And that's how it is in the comic book, too. Once in the comic book, they call the séance room the heart of the house. That's a thing that they've called it since Sarah was alive. And so the first issue is called The Heart of the House, and it's all about building the séance room. And then once it's finished, that room, the heart starts beating, essentially. And the house in the comic series is its own entity. It's alive. It's a character. And it's an entity that needs to be constantly fed. And that's why this construction, you know, has to go around the clock 24 hours a day. And its job, its duty, is to basically kind of create this little pocket dimension to keep all of these spirits from being able to harm anybody or being, you know, in our world, in our face. And anything that they did wrong with the construction would create basically, you know, like a crack in that facade that would allow things, supernatural occurrences, to come in. And this has worked, you know, as a storytelling element, it's worked fantastic for me. But it also seems to really be based in a lot of, you know, actual thought about some of what this house was like. I mean, there's so many stories about people who swear that the door was over here when they went down the hallway, and when they came back through, it was down at the opposite end, just like as if the house was playing tricks on them. It's really cool.
Wow. So, geez, that'd be it for me right there. Speaking of Johnny Depp, it sounds like a Johnny Depp movie. So if she was so private about it and everybody else was so tight-lipped, so was it not till after it became open to the public that the stories of it being haunted and stuff happening to people really took off?
So there was a lot of gossip that had made it all the way to the papers while she was still alive. And that seemed to be kind of hearsay. But I mean, her story somehow made it all the way to newspapers, like during her lifetime, without her having given any, you know, of that out herself. So the talk of her having seen the psychic that hit papers while she was still alive, the talk of the house being haunted was in papers while she was alive. And then afterwards, when she died and everybody got in the house, that's when they started piecing things together. That's when like information started coming out about who the foreman was and who had been working on, you know, with her for all these years and what her life was like and what room she slept in. And that's when they started finding all these bizarre, you know, rooms and doorways. And that's when, you know, people just, they couldn't wrap their mind around it. And a lot of those rooms are still a mystery to this day. Sam's room itself is a really unique room. For example, if you walk in to the main door, there's another door immediately to your left. If you open it, it drops down two stories into a sink in a kitchen. So if you would step through, you would just like fall into that sink. And then there's one other way out of the room, and it's a secret passage through what looks like it's supposed to be just like a cab, like a big closet almost. And Sarah was always seen going in the one door and never seen coming out because she always exited through the secret door. And it was just like a normal routine thing. And in a lot of, you know, after her death, a lot of people said that that was part of her routine to stay safe while she was communing with the spirits. She needed to trick the spirits. That's why this door has the drop off. That's why she had a secret way out after she would end the communications, all this stuff. But a lot of it just doesn't quite add up, or at least we don't really fully understand it. I guess, you know, that's why mysteries in the title.
Now, you've obviously spent some time in the seance room.
Yeah, it's very cool. I was so excited to step foot in there. I did a press event where went to the house and invited newspapers, a bunch of board game reviewers, comic book reviewers, paranormal researchers, paranormal podcasts, all sorts of cool people. And we invited them all. We sent in these really awesome aged letters about this mystery event. And we held this in the carriage house. It's like a big garage where they kept the carriages on the property. And so all these people showed up. They were really excited. They didn't know quite what this was all about. And we debuted a prototype of the board game. They all got to play it and then give us our feedback. I did a bunch of interviews with anybody who would listen, essentially. And then I gave like a speech. We gave everybody an ashcan preview of the first issue of the comic book, and I signed them all. They all got like a gift bag. We fed them dinner. And then at the end of the night, I said, okay, now to end the night, we're all going to go on a special private tour through the house. And I said, but we have shut off all the power and each of you are getting a flashlight. And I would say probably about 40% of them just dropped right out. They're like, nope, I'm out. Nope, not doing it. I'm going to do it. And the rest of them did, and man, they had so much fun, which was the idea. And so they all went and wrote these amazing, great articles about what a cool night they had, which was the whole reason we did it, was, you know, to try to get some of the press rolling about this comic and board game on the way. And that was just such a great, wonderful experience. I had such a good time with everybody. I'll never forget it. So cool. But yeah, it was really interesting because I go through the house with completely different lens than other people. So, you know, I'm not thinking about supernatural elements, and I'm thinking about like details that I hadn't noticed before. You know, I'm like, oh, so in the script, this conversation needs to take place in this room. But now I realize that when she walks out and she goes down the hallway and then like takes a right and she's all of a sudden in the kitchen, that's not true. It takes you about like 20 minutes to get to the kitchen from here. Like, oh, I messed that up. Or, oh, that's what that molding looks like. And I mention this because it means that every room I'm in, I'm super detail oriented. I'm just looking at it from that creative standpoint. And therefore, I would love to spend as much time as I could in every room. But there's certain rooms in the house that I immediately felt like it was almost like the house was just pushing me out of them. Like I felt super claustrophobic. I didn't want to be in that room any longer. I wanted to get out of it. And it's not that they were particularly small or even necessarily a creepy looking room or anything. It was just it was a really strange, oppressive vibe that I noted, you know, to myself right away. I'm like, that's weird, because I mean, the creepier the room, the longer I want to be in it, not the other way around. Like, why am I having this weird, like, fight or flight thing happening, you know, right now, where when I was just in the middle of being geeking out, you know, essentially. And I had behind me on the tour, I had some paranormal groups that they were kind of, it would come up behind me. And it was really interesting it felt very validating, because I would have, you know, one of them was kind of, she was speaking out loud, you know, recording herself about what she was feeling in every room. And her words were echoing my thoughts almost every single time. And I was like, that's fascinating. It was really, really interesting to see that I wasn't alone and, you know, feeling bizarre things in certain rooms and not others.
Now, have you had any other experiences there other than just feeling a little bit odd or a little bit oppressed?
I had, it's not super juicy or anything, but it was very weird. So I was taking pictures in the house, and I was taking reference photos actually for my artist. And I was in a room and I had taken a picture, and then later I took another picture, and I could tell that they're, you know, one after the other in the same room. I remember taking them. But later when I went through my camera roll, there was a photo in between them that I hadn't taken. And I was like, what is this picture? I didn't take this photo. I have zero recollection of it, but I can tell where it was based on the background and, you know, the photo before and after it. So I know it must've been a slip of the thumb, you know, as I was walking through this particular room. But it's a picture of a rocking chair, and the rocking chair it's striking right away because it looks super old, but two, it looks really ratty. Like there's like kind of torn fabric hanging off of it. And that's unusual for the house. All of the furniture in it is absolutely just pristine, gorgeous. Everything looks like it's brand spanking new. And then when you look at the chair, there's parts of the chair that just sort of disappear. As you follow with your eyes, you can see right through like sections of it. I figured, okay, it's probably like a motion blur effect or something, because, you know, was out of focus, or who knows? I don't know what it was, but I showed it to one of the guides and I was like, hey, can you confirm? I just want to know what room this is in. And they're like, nope, that's not here. And I'm like, no, it's definitely here. I'm pretty scared. Like, no. That's not here. And I was like, no, it's definitely okay. I'm like, let me show you. I'm like, here's a picture before, here's a picture after. I was like, it's clearly upstairs in like this, somewhere over there in this room. I think I know which room it is. They're like, no, there's no rocking chair like that in that room. They're like, absolutely. So we went back and we checked, and there wasn't. And I was going nuts, because I was like, I'm not crazy. There's a chair right here. Like, it's clearly up here somewhere. And they were all like, no, that's not here. I don't know what to tell you. Maybe that picture was taken at like a different similar looking house. I'm like, no, it was taken today in the past hour. I was just losing it. And that stuck with me so hard that I had written, in addition to this series, I wrote a one-shot comic story that's it's like a standalone story that takes place in present during a tour of the house. And it's about a girl who's going through, and the house is like opening up its memories to her. So when she touches certain things, she gets flashbacks basically that tie into like the regular series, the timeline while Sarah was alive. And there's a room that she's in on the tour. I wrote this in there specifically because of this, where she sees a rocking chair. And she's like, look at this chair. It's so strange looking and out of place. And her boyfriend's like, what chair? There's no chair in this room. What are you talking about? She's like, yeah, it is. It's right there. And that's when she starts getting this kind of like flashback image of Sarah in the chair, you know, and she's seeing this kind of ghostly, you know, image. And so I wrote that. I wrote that exact rocking chair into the story.
Wow. So, and how can you say, how can you preface that and say this isn't very juicy? I mean, you took basically a picture of a time slip. I mean, you took a picture of something,
right?
That's crazy. So what are some of the things that happen to people at the house that make them think it's haunted?
So this is one of my favorite things about having, you know, last time I visited, I right out the gate, you know, I had a bunch of tour guides who work there. You know, not necessarily guides. They'll have like people just kind of planted throughout the house, and their job is to just keep an eye on you to make sure you stay on the chosen path. Because it's a very long tour and it's very incredible. You're not seeing the whole house. I don't think everybody realizes that. You know, you skipped a lot. There's like tons of portions that aren't on the tour. And then sometimes they'll be working on them or doing things and they'll rope them back in. And sometimes they'll never rope them in because they have their offices in part of the house and stuff too. And you just never see it because the house is that big. They can hide a whole business.
How big is the house? How many square feet?
Oh, that's a great question. And I should know the answer. 24,000.
Holy.
Yes.
Not quite LeBron James' house. But it's a pretty good size. It's pretty good size. Holy smokes.
The last time I was there, I had like one of the, not the tour guides, but like one of the more stationary people, you know, come up to me right away. And they're like, are you Josh Warner? Are you the guy who's writing the story, the comic book story? I was like, yeah, hi, it's nice to meet you. And they're like, do you have a second? Can I talk to you? I'm like, okay, sure. And this happened to me multiple times while I was there from multiple employees. And they were like, they were just bursting at the seams to tell me every strange thing that's ever happened to them while they were at work. And it's fascinating. There's a piano in the house that has scared the crap out of so many people. It waits until there's just nobody around except, you know, one or two employees, and it'll start making sounds and noises and playing music, and it just freaks them out. They can't get used to it. One employee said she almost quit after 3 months. She always, while she was talking and facing, you know, the group, you know, she would have something touch her back, and she would turn around constantly in the middle of her like talk, and there would be no one there. And she said it became like this thing that kept happening over and over. She kept thinking like one of the tourists was like tapping her on the back, and there was no one there. And it always happens in one particular room. A lot of stories like that. There's definitely been some apparitions that have been viewed, less of them, but they do happen. People have seen people, shadows, you know, it's a big house. So when you close up for the night, it's really imperative that you check the whole house thoroughly.
Oh, no.
Hiding, right? You know, overnight kind of thing. Because people will try that. They will try to like sneak off the tour and like stay overnight kind of thing, thinking that the house is big enough where they can get away with it. I'll go hide under a bed and they'll never know. So, you know, these employees have to do these sweeps of the house, and it's probably the scariest part of their job because it's the end of the night. Everybody's gone. They're alone, and they keep seeing like a shadow turning a corner ahead of them. And they're like, hey, who's over there? You know, running up ahead and there's nobody there. There's a lot of that. There's a lot of tourists who get really cool photos and then they send them to the house, and the house will actually vet them really thoroughly. Be like, no, that's not an orb. That's a, you know, speck of dust in the lens or whatever. They'll vet them. And then when they have ones that they don't have anyone who can disprove that it's something supernatural, or anyone who can like give any evidence as to what the photo, what it's showing, what it is, it usually looks like a shape of a person. They will often ask for the permission to utilize the photos. And if you go during, like a cool time of year, like if you go during October, they switch the tour up and they will put on, they'll make it like a ghost version of the tour. And they will actually tell you every supernatural recorded occurrence that has taken place in each room. And they'll actually blow up the photos and they'll put them on like standees and stuff.
Is your picture of the rocking chair included in that?
It's not.
Who do I email? Who do I call and demand justice?
Oh my gosh. I've shown it to some people, but I haven't shown it to the house per se, like in an official capacity, other than me trying to figure out where this it was, because it was kind of written off, like, you know, like they get a lot of supernatural stories. So I didn't want to push it too hard, but I mean, it stuck with me for sure.
and for what it's worth, that would be a great story as another side story, is some people hiding in the house.
Absolutely.
After closing and then basically being tormented the whole night.
The hellish night they would have if they pulled that off. Oh.
Yeah. And then it is the person's coming in the morning to open up. These guys burst. Let us out. That would be fantastic. That'd be a good side story.
That's ammo for sure.
Is there anything else that you want people to know about the house that you feel is like really important that they, you know?
One, you should, if you ever get the chance, it is bucket list worthy. It's unlike anything else. So it's so worth visiting. It's so, so cool. But two, if you want to plan a trip out there, try and like a weekend trip and you're pretty flexible on when, try to find a Friday the 13th on the calendar and make the day that you go. So here's why they do so Sarah believed that the number 13 held a ton of power. And it's found throughout the house's design and construction endlessly. And she thought that it held like a supernatural strength. So through my own personal research, what I found is that there's also a lot of ties to Francis Bacon, the philosopher, throughout the house. And he also had an obsession with the number 13. And he was also the subject of a ton of obsession by the Freemasons. And through more research, I found – I'm getting way off track. Anyway, the number 13 has all sorts of interesting ties, and my theories as to why she was obsessed with the number 13 are a lot different than other people's. I think I tie them all the way back to Freemasonry. But anyway, it's a special day. So every time there's a Friday the 13th, the house holds a special ceremony, and there's the bell tower. The bell tower is a really famous part in the house. It's where – they would go ring this bell at midnight every night to let all the workers know that Sarah is not to be bothered with any questions because she's going to the seance room. And she went there at midnight every single night. And when she died, they decided that this was kind of like a sacred space. We're not gonna go to the bell tower on the tour. We're going to leave it alone. We're not gonna ring it. Except whenever the calendar falls on Friday the 13th, they ring the bell 13 times on the 13th hour in her honor, and they do this kind of bell ringing ceremony. It's like a really big deal. And it's a cool thing to see if you can go and be there and like be on the grounds when they do this. So they called me last year and they said, hey, would you like to be a special guest bell ringer for the bell ringing ceremony on Friday the 13th? And I said, hell yes. You know, and so super honored, right? So next thing you know, I'm stuck in traffic in Silicon Valley trying to get to the house, and they're freaking out because I'm running late. They're calling me. They're like, listen, in 100 years of this tradition, we've never done it at 1:01. It has to be done at 1 o'clock, the 13th hour. And I'm like, I know. I'm so sorry. You know, and I was like, if you have to do without me, they're like, oh, we will. I'm like, okay.
So no, don't worry. We're not waiting.
So I ended up like jumping out of a moving car and just like running because that was faster than, you know, traffic. And they had somebody planted outside to like grab me by the arm and like run me through the house on the shortest path to the bell tower as possible. So, you know, it's like shortcut to it. And I'm going through rooms I've never seen before because I'm not on the tour. And I'm like, oh, wow, where are we right now? And they're like, no, there's no time. We got to get to the bell tower. So get to the bell tower. I've got 30 seconds before I have to ring, and they're prepping me. And so there's a historian there who's going to show me, you know, what to do. And she says, listen, this is the most important part. You can't ring the bell 14 times. It has to be 13. And I'm like, yeah, I can count. No problem. And she's like, no, you don't understand. It's a really big bell. It's going to build up momentum, and it's going to want to ring all by itself. It's just going to swing back and just ring a 14th time, even though you didn't pull the rope. And I'm like, that's absolutely terrifying. You're telling me this now? We have like 15 seconds to go. I'm like, what do I do? So it's a pulley system. You know, one rope goes up, the other goes down. And so what you do is you just reach across and you grab both of them and you hold them perfectly still. And the bell kind of just, you know, fizzles out. And if you do it right at the right time. And I said, okay, I think I got it. I said, but listen, if I screw this up, can we just not tell people that it was me in the tower this year? And they said, actually, we have a camera person right here and we're live streaming right now. Was unreal, man. Oh, man. But I nailed it. It was awesome. I am 90% sure to this day. I've been too afraid to watch the video footage, but 90% sure it was exactly 13 times.
Wow, that's not, I gotta be honest, that's not a very high percentage. For sure.
So much doubt in my brain.
And well, the house did not fall in upon itself, right?
Right.
It sucked you into the vortex. So
later I had, you know, I was at New York Comic Con, and which is like second biggest convention in the world. And we were doing a panel where I was going to be speaking about the house, and we had like a special variant cover collector's edition comic, and a bunch of the people from the house flew out and they sat in. Somebody from Hot Topic delivered me the very first t-shirt during the panel, and I put it on. It was really cool. It was awesome. Everybody was there. It was really, really nice to see how excited they were to be featured at Comic-Con. And I was like, that's awesome. We went to dinner and I was talking to Walter. He's like the manager of the whole estate. He kind of runs everything. And he's like, you know, I've never been allowed to touch the bell. And I was like, wait, what? I was like, what are you talking about? I was like, you run this place. And he's like, yeah. He's like, actually, none of my employees have ever touched the bell either. It's like, it's kind of a thing. And I was like, wow, what do you mean? And it turns out, well, like over the past century, this tradition, it's usually a historian that does it. And it's just kind of a torch that passed down. And there's actually very few people who have ever touched it. And so that made me even more honored to find that out after the fact, but it also made me even more anxious because I almost screwed it up and I was almost late and all this stuff.
I got to be honest. Don't turn your back on Walter, because he might have, all these years of anger of not being able to touch the bell. He might take it out because he knows you did it 14 times. He's like, and there's still, you know, nobody said it. You know, I can see just anger. The anger builds up, and I'll get him. So, well, before we wrap up here, why don't you tell everybody where they can find the book,
yes,
and find the game, right? And it sounds like a pretty cool game.
So excited. So the book killed it. So the single issues come out like in stores every month, right? And those just blew out the door. They're getting hard to find. If you can find a single issue in your local comic shop, just buy it. I don't care if you saw it on eBay, just buy it, because they're getting hard to find. The collected edition, that's like all of volume one in one big book, that sold out through Simon Schuster. It's sold out through Diamond Comic Distributors. It's now sold out here at Source Point Press at the publisher level. It's just like some stores that have a stock left. And I've been on a book tour, and the last five dates, I had no books to sign. I ended up just giving speeches because there was no books. I was like, oh, this sucks, because I sold out. But so what we decided to do is, if you go to WinchesterMysteryComic.com, from now until September 27th, we're taking pre-orders for a super awesome collector like edition version. So it's all the comics so far in one book. It's gold foil stamped. It's got cover art that I did myself, and it's got a ton of bonus features about the history of the house. And you get all this, and you can get it signed by me, all that stuff, for like $25. Not bad. And then you also, there's an add-on option where if you want, you can add the board game on, and you can get the board game before it hits stores, like months before it hits stores. You'll be the first person to get a copy. So that's at WinchesterMysteryComic.com. We're only allowing orders for a few weeks, and then we cut it off. And then everybody else, if you miss out on that, you have to wait until like the second printing of the regular version of the volume. And the cool special edition version, that won't be in stores at all. That's just for this campaign that we're holding. And so far, so good. I mean, a lot of people have been really stoked. Let's see, right now, we've had 370 people show up and back it. So not bad. We still have 15 days. If anybody is curious and they want to read the story, it's an even mix of like supernatural horror and history. There's a lot of ton of real history in it. It's been my dream come true to write, and volume two is on the way. So now's the best time to jump in, read volume one, get caught up, and be ready for when volume two starts hitting stores.
Boy, now that is a great sales pitch right there. I like that. I like that. So we'll try to get all that information up and at least let everybody, get to the link and try to be able to order the book. So that'd be kind of cool. So, well, Josh, I'm glad you reached out to us. This was pretty awesome. I mean, I got to admit, I love the historical. Anytime you can combine ghost stories and real history, it's a win in my book.
So
for sure. For sure. So I appreciate you spending some time and telling everybody about the house. And I still think that I need to make a phone call and get that rocking chair included in the ghost tour this year, because that's cool. That's really cool. Pretty cool. So yeah, I appreciate it, Josh. And we'll be looking forward to the next edition. I mean, I'm going to go order the first thing now. I mean, I'm going to go order and get it all read up, you know?
Awesome. So, thanks, man.
So, we'll stay in touch. And like I said, we're looking forward to the second edition to come up, second batch.
Can't wait.
And I hope that something really scary happens to you.
Oh, yeah, it gets nuts. Volume 2 gets crazy.
All right, Josh. Well, hey, thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for tuning in to this week's episode of the From the Shadows podcast. Until next time, never shy away from the darkness or what may be lurking in the shadows. We are out.
God only knows what's hiding in our shadows.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today we discuss technical diagramming with systems architect Maya. Let's go. First question. You've spent 10 hours slogging over a sequence diagram that should have taken 5. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board. And if I'm being honest, Miro would probably cut that time down by half. You know, with its AI tools and ready-to-go templates.
Next, your diagrams become so bulky, it's more complex than the solar system. But all it takes is a few clicks and...
It's Miro. I've used those technical shape packs way too many times, and stuff is just digestible on its infinite online canvas.
Now, the final question. Everyone's brought in, but you have to make all these tasks all the way over in Jira. But wait, it's done. Is it...
Miro. Easy with its two-way Jira sync. Easy to plot dependencies. Everyone always knows what's up.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people creating technical diagrams without workflow glitches. Get your first three boards for free at Miro.com. That's M-I-R-O.com.